All right, we are on sheet 36, and we need to talk about the Gemara, and we also need to talk about Eis La'asos Hashem. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something very radical. I'm going to talk about the Gemara bit first, and Eis La'asos afterwards.
Whoa.
Because I don't want to not get through the Gemara bit. And the Eis La'asos is really is a bit of a bonus to understand how the sugya works a little bit better, but the Gemara thing is essential, so let's do that. Let's do the Gemara stuff for 20-25 minutes, and then we'll do the Eis La'asos at the end. Let's see if we can do it that way. So turn to page 3, and let's start with the number 16 through 20. Because this is really critical stuff. The Gemara has a very interesting statement, number 16. Tan Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a brisa. Ha'oiskin b'mikra, people who want to sit and learn Chumash. Nida, that's a good measure. Ve'enu mida, but it's not such a good measure. Meaning, yeah, it's nice, but it's, you know, there are other things that you may be ought to be doing more than that. But Mishnah, if someone wants to sit and learn Mishnah, Mida, that's good, it's a measure, but you'll get a reward for that. But Talmud, but if you want to learn Talmud, there's no greater limud than Talmud. What's the matter? We're on source 16. Okay, fine. There's no greater limud than Talmud. Ula'olam have a rats la Mishnah, yosem in a Talmud, but you still need to make sure that you run to Mishnah more than you run to Talmud. So says the Gemara. Hagufa kasha. That itself is a contradiction. Amar, didn't you say the Talmud ain lechamida gedolim iso? Didn't you just tell me that the greatest thing you can learn is Talmud? The Hava Aman, then you later said, just after that, La'olam have a rats la Mishnah, yosem in a Talmud, and then you said that Mishnah actually is preferable to Talmud. You make your mind up. Which is it? Is it Mishnah or is it Talmud? You decide. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you have to understand, there was a shift. B'yamei Rebbe Nishna Mishnah Zois. In the days of Rebbe, now who was Rebbe? Rabbi Yudanos, like we saw last time, who put together the Mishnah. This particular teaching was applicable in the time of Rabbi Yudanos. Shavk kula alma masnitim va'azlu basa Talmuda. Everybody stopped doing Mishnah and started doing Talmud. And this is why I wanted to bring this to you. There was a shift. Once the Mishnah was created, there was a people said, all right, that's done that. We've done with Mishnah. We're going to start doing this Talmud thing, whatever that is. Hadadarash lehu, and therefore they had to emphasize to them, la'olam havi ratz l'mishnah yotam in the Talmud. Don't forget to learn your Mishnah. Make sure you go to learn your Mishnah. They have to emphasize that because people had decided to move on to something new, which was Talmud. So you see already from this Gemara, there's a shift in gear. At the time of the writing or the putting together of the Mishnah, and by the way, we saw the beginnings of a machlokas last time. We didn't get onto it in class, but we saw the machlokas in Rav Shmirigon and the Rambam on the last sheet. Rav Shmirigon on the last sheet clearly said that the Mishnah was not written down. It was an oral text. It was a text, but it was an oral text. Whereas the Rambam says that the Mishnah was actually written when they produced it, they wrote it down. So there's a machlokas as to when it was written. We'll see later on when we talk about the writing of Gemara, if the same issue exists on the Gemara. But one thing's for sure, there was a change of gear of some kind. Why? What is it that people started doing that was Talmud, which was different to what they were doing before? So let's have a look at that today. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia later on says, Rav Ashi v'Ravina soif hora'ah. Rav Ashi and Ravina are the end of Hora'ah. Now, what does Hora'ah mean?
Teaching.
They are the last teachers. Now, this word is not just, doesn't mean teaching Torah, as in limud Torah. Hora'ah is really ruling in Torah, ruling on specific issues of Torah. Psak. Now, obviously, they're not the end of Psak in terms of today, though we have Psak Halacha. But they're the end of something, the end of an era. So you have a new era which begins at the Mishnah and ends with Rav Ashi and Ravina. What is that? So look at Rashi number 18. Sof Hora'ah. There's a lot to say about this. One of my very close Rebbeim, Rav Meir Tribbetz, by the way, has a lot of shirim on this online. There's a fantastic website where his shirim are all uploaded called hashkafacircle.com. I'll write it on the board. If you're looking for intelligent Torah, hashkafacircle.com. If you're looking for unusual and intelligent and slightly out of the box Torah, Rabbi Tribbetz is a Rosh Hashiva in Har Nof. He also has a very unusual background. He knows Shaf backwards, forwards, upwards, down. He also has a PhD in cosmology from Princeton. Applied physics from Princeton, which he got when he was in his early 20s. And he went to the Juilliard School of Music. And he grew up in a frum home. You work that out. So he's an unusual guy. And his Torah is is out of this world. So you should definitely go on here, and you'll become an addict pretty quickly. Then we can talk about what else you should learn. But have a look in number 18. So here's a lot of things to say about this, but I have less to say right now. Sof HaRa'ah. Says the Rashi, Sof Kol Amoraim. This is the end of the Amoraim. Ad Yemehem, until their days, Lo Yehag to Gemara. There was no Gemara, Al Haseda. There was no order to the Gemara. Of course, they had Masechtas. Remember, we said in the Mishnah they'd organized Masechtas and Sedorim, and we saw that last time. But there was not yet any Gemara. When there was a question asked in the Bet Midrash, or there was a question on something that happened, just a Shaila, what should we do with this halacha? B'din Maman, whether in monetary laws or Issa V'Heta or ritual laws. Each rabbi would give his own understanding. Rav Ashi v'Ravina Sidru. They organized Shmois Amoraim Shelifnehim. They had in front of them all of the teachings of the Amoraim, which had been since the time of the Mishnah, the last 200-250 years. They organized them, v'kavu, and they put them al Seder HaMasechtas in the appropriate Masechtas where they felt they best fitted. Kol echad ve'echad etzel haMishnah haRa'uya v'hashanuya la. Each one on the Mishnah that was most appropriate to it. Meaning, they had an entire body of information, and they had to decide, we now have a structure of the Mishnah, with all the different books of the Mishnah, let's work out which of these teachings go best in which book, on which Mishnah, and we'll put it together like that. And they created this, they synthesized this book. The Hikshu Kashas, and they asked questions, because the Gemara, there is a voice, by the way. If you've learned Gemara with me, we talked about this quite a bit. The narrator, there is a voice to the Gemara, there is an anonymous voice that takes you through the Shakla Vakaria, the up and down, the back and forth, asking the questions, but what about this, and how about that, and how does that work? Who is that? Who is that person? It's not a specific rabbi, so it's the narrator. It's the person who is stitching together the Gemara. It's Rav Ashi, Ravina, or maybe it's later people than that. We'll see how that works, but there is a narrator to the Gemara who's putting it all together. Says Rashi, he wants to say that's Rav Ashi. The Hikshu Kushiyas Sheyesh LaHashiv UPirkum, and they answer them. Sheruoyin LaTarif, the answers they want to give. Hey, Amoraim Sheimam, them and the Amoraim in their yeshivas. Meaning, this was not just Rav Ashi and Ravina. This was an entire academy in Bavel of people who were putting this project together. The Kavuah Kol BeGemara, they made the whole thing into the Gemara. And he gives examples of things that they're asking in the Gemara, etc. Eisvei, Meisvei, Rabinhu, I'm not getting into all that now. Just go back, go a line further. So they put it on the Seder HaMasechtas for HaMishnah Shesidu Rebbe, Ubar Rav Ashi, Ravinu V'Kav, and they fixed it into a book. Now, we'll see, it's not quite as simple as that. There were certain things that got added on and ordered in the Gemara even after Rav Ashi and Ravina. There are Amoraim who are quoted in the Gemara who lived after Rav Ashi and Ravina. So it's not true to say that Rav Ashi and Ravina are the final people to appear in the Gemara. But they are the ones that really put that work in its almost finished form. And the rest was, if you like, finished off here and there and polished off along the next 100 years or so. There is a whole shaila as to what was the function of the people who came just after the Amoraim, who we call the Savoraim. Did the Savoraim just polish things up, or did they put a lot of the actual meat and potatoes into the Gemara? That is a big debate. If you ever study Talmud in a Jewish studies department in America or wherever you are, you'll hear a lot of a man called Professor Weiss Halivni. Professor Weiss Halivni, David Weiss Halivni, is an academic. He's a very important person in the world of Talmudic study. He has a whole theory that actually there's a group of people called the Stamayim, who came after, he called them that, there's a made-up name, the Stam people, who made up the Stam of the Gemara, and they came after Rav Ashi. I'm not getting into that now. If you're interested in that kind of thing, you could read his books, you can read responses to his books, you can read the scripture of it, and all that. It's like way beyond what we could possibly do in one shift. But for the purpose of our class, Rav Ashi and Ravina are really the people who put that basic format for the Gemara. Yes, Elisheva.
And they basically just the Mishnah and then they reorganized it?
No, the Mishnah is the Mishnah. The Mishnah structure remains. But then they had all this extra material of questions and some of it is obvious clarification of the Mishnah. That gets put with the Mishnah. But some of it's just general questions. You wonder why the Gemara often goes off at tangents. The Gemara is a very carefully structured work. It's what I call before synthesized. Meaning, even opinions which are given in the Gemara, Rav, this one says this, and Rav, this one argues, those people may not have even ever met each other. Those people could live 150 years apart from each other. And yet you open up a Gemara and you say, well, how could he be arguing with him when he lived in the year 250 and he lived in the year 420? The answer is, the Gemara is not interested in giving you a historical record. It's not just a bunch of historical records stitched together. It's an entirely new book that steers you through the halachic process, showing you how the different opinions connect with each other. And sometimes the famous author of this opinion is Rabbi X, and the famous author of the other opinion which disagrees with it is Rabbi Y, but they're from different generations. So it's put together in that way. So the Gemara is very carefully constructed, and sometimes it goes off the tangents. Sometimes, for example, whilst it mentions one particular Rav in the Amoraim, it says, okay, so now we mentioned him, let's have 25 teachings of his, not on the topic of this Masechta at all, but now we're mentioning him, let's talk about all his things. And he goes through like 8 pages of all his teachings. That's often the case. It's tangential in that sense. Yes?
So, it didn't seem to be like presented as such a big problem, but isn't it a problem if the Gemara says that Ravina and Ravashi were so far out and they weren't actually?
No, because you have to define what Hara is. Hara doesn't mean, in fact, the Gaonim will see later, Rav Shurugan himself says these weren't the people who finished the Talmud. Hora and Siyum HaTalmud are two different things. Meaning, Hora maybe, these were the people who gave, if you like, the final principles of the Gemara. Whereas the, if you like, the polishing and some of the back and forth of the Gemara may have been put in after this. So Hora is a specific definition. Now, yeah, Hora means sack. I think it's definitely fair to say that after Rav Ashi and Ravina, there were no new principles of psak that were put in the Gemara. Everything that may have been added afterwards, until the time when it was finally sealed, is all explanatory. So you have to define what hara means. So I don't think it's a problem at all. It's just a question of defining what is hara and what is the end of the Gemara.
Also, the Gemara quotes Breitot.
Yes. Breitot, of course, come from way before the Gemara.
Right. So commenting on the Mishnah, how
does
it use things that were left out?
So let's talk about that now. We're going to have a whole shiur where we talk about Breitot and things like that, and other words for Chazal that we haven't talked about, like Yerushalmi and the Sifra and the Sifrei and all these kind of things. We'll deal with that. But for now, just take it, if you like this. There's a whole bunch of oral texts, like the Breitot, whatever, that are out there. And Rabbi Yehuda takes a subset of those, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and sends them into the Mishnah, okay? What about all the rest of this stuff that's not yet been textualized in the Mishnah? So that's all left out. Left out means brighter. Okay? Brighter literally in Aramaic means left out. Okay? Outside. Bra means outside. Therefore, one of the things the Gemara does, as Nadiva quite rightly says, is the Gemara takes a lot of this material, and it's just because it's not in the Mishnah, it doesn't mean that it's illegitimate. It just means that when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is trying to create the most condensed version you could possibly condense, without forgetting the Torah, and yet the rest is left oral, that other stuff he realizes is also important. It's analysis. So the Gemara will often bring brises and crunch them together against the wording of the Mishnah and try and use them to test the Mishnah, to analyze the Mishnah. Does the Mishnah mean exactly this? Does the Mishnah mean exactly that? Let's use these brises to try and find the best understanding of the Mishnah we can.
Can they use a brises to disagree?
No. A brises can't disagree with the Mishnah, but it can define and analyze the Mishnah. Meaning, if it's a straight machlokes between a clear Mishnah and a clear brises, the Mishnah will win. Usually. But if your Mishnah could go this way or could go that way, and the brises can be brought as a proof as to which is the correct way to go, so if there are one or two or three brises that clearly justify this understanding of the Mishnah, so presumably that is the correct understanding of the Mishnah, and that's the way we'll go. That's how brises are often used. Yes?
If the Gemara got different opinions from people at different times,
yes.
Doesn't the later people contradict the earlier people?
In fact, on the contrary, there is a principle in the Gemara that the later people win over the earlier people. The Gemara, the halacha follows the later rather than the earlier opinions. You and I, more you than I, possibly, are brought up with this idea that later people can never disagree with earlier people. That's just not true. It's overstated. It is true that there are strata that, Amoraim don't disagree with Tanaim. And the Gemara is based on that principle, and we'll have to work out why that is. There's a Kesef Mishnah, which is important, we'll have to look at. But it's not true, for example, that Rishonim never disagree with Gaonim. On the contrary, the Rambam makes a lot of the fact that the Gaonim can be overruled by the Rishonim. And even the Achronim, in the later years, in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, can disagree with the Rishonim sometimes. It's rare that they do that. But this idea that there's, if you like, stratification of halacha in the way that you can't go beyond that line is not so straightforward. And in terms of the Gemara, the later often the better. We'll talk about that another time. Yes?
After the Mishnah was compiled, like, was it then, there was no printing? Like,
correct.
How did it
and it may not have even been written. There are three stages. There's an oral text, there's a written text, there's a printed text. Now, printing for sure there was not.
Right.
Printing wasn't invented for another 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But it was in China, but it wasn't in Europe and anywhere that these people were. Okay? So was it an oral text or a written text? So both of them are possible. A written text obviously is, you write it down. People wrote all sorts of stuff down. Manuscripts. An oral text is also very, it's not as good as the oral law, because the oral law is ideas rather than words. And once you have an oral text, you run the risk of playing broken telephone. So you have to get it down quickly. But an oral text is like a Hansel and Mary had a little lamb.
No, but I know, when you have, Tanaim or Amoraim, the matter,
yes,
arguing with each other, do they have copies of the Mishnah sitting with them that they're consulting, or are they still basing on an oral
no,
Mishnah?
No, that's extreme, that's good. They had people who were expert in what they called Girsa. Girsa was memorization of the texts of the Mishnah, Brisas, the Tosafos. For example, we had this in, who's in my Gemara class from last semester? Okay, you remember it said, Tam Tana, for Tana Lifnei Revi, whoever it was, Revi Pinchas Ben, whoever it was. So, one particular situation they were debating in Gemara, and someone stood up, what they call a Tana. Tana in that sense doesn't mean one of the Tanaim, but it means someone whose expertise was having memorized Brisas and Mishnahs. And said, they quoted the whole thing. Meaning everybody was expected to know the Mishnah. And it's not that hard. I mean, for me it's hard because I'm just not, and for you it's hard because we're not used to memorizing things. They run competitions, you know, for kids memorizing Mishnayos. These kids memorized thousands and thousands and thousands of Mishnayos. Really. So there were people who, lots of people who knew the Mishnah. The Brisas was like an expertise, not everybody knew them. But they had people that did that. They were analysis people and they were material people. Of course, once you write down, it gets easier. It gets harder as well because then you can imprint mistakes into the writing.
So at what point did it become where the people, the rabbis who were arguing with each other and making decisions would have had copies of the Mishnah with them?
So I don't know about written copies of the Mishnah, because that's already a big machlokas. Certainly by the 8th century, 8th, 9th century, everybody had written copies of everything, and we have those texts. But in the 4th, 5th century, there's a debate as to whether, according to the Rambam, they were working off written copies of the Mishnah, and according to Rosh Hashanah, they were working off oral texts of the Mishnah. Okay, and therefore there was sometimes a question as to exactly what the text was, not just what it meant. Yeah? Yes? Either there was a written text of the Mishnah they were working on, or there was an oral text of the Mishnah, but either way there was a text of the Mishnah.
So how do you have different Girsas of like Gemara?
So there are two of Gemara? That's usually an issue of copying, as to who copied what and how, and little mistakes that may have crept in. This is oral law. We're not worried about tiny mistakes here and tiny mistakes there, and is it this way they call it? It makes a difference. But that's, you know, if you're looking at the Gemara Begadol, they don't make a big difference. In Torah Shabbat Bichtav, we're very concerned about that. Therefore, we do everything we possibly can to avoid any kind of error. But with Torah Shabbat Peh, it's, you know. In the Mishnah, yes, less so than in the Gemara. Okay? And when he gets to the Chumash, even less so.
So what do you do if a Girsa would make a difference in terms of the law?
So, it depends. You know, I'm getting off the topic a little bit, but when you're learning Gemara, one of the things that they tell you when you learn Gemara is that if you have, in the printed Vilna Shas, some words are written like in square brackets, and some words are written in round brackets, like that.
Yeah.
So the general rule, the way I was taught in Yeshiva, is that, you know, if it's in square brackets, you learn it, and if it's in round brackets, then you don't. Okay? But obviously it's much more complicated than that. It means that there are manuscripts that exist that have both this Girsa and this Girsa. Well, they're the same, aren't they? So let's maybe let's say change the word, okay? And the real limud, I think, the way I was taught later, is you try and understand the Gemara according to both Girsas, because clearly they were, unless it's just a straightforward copy error, which you can see, it's just a copy error, it's a typing error, as it were. So the Gemara has to make sense according to both Girsas, because they both work. And often you can make them both work. And often you find that different Rishonim were learning from different Gisars. Not radically different Gisars, but a word here and a word there. Again, it's Tereshi Bal Peh. We're not fanatical about it. We want to get it right, but it's not like, you know, if it's this or if it's that. Tereshi Bichtav, we are fanatical about. Let's carry on. Look at number 20. Look how the Rambam understands it. This is very important. The Rambam says the following. Kol mi sha'avad achrav. This is after the Mishnah. Anyone who looks goes after the Mishnah, comes after the Mishnah. Achri oisa achabura. And after that collected text, the chabura that we produced, ha'nichbada. Lo ha'yisa matarata ela lahavin divrei ha'mishnah. This is very interesting. Up until the time of the Mishnah, what text were they working off? What was the text before the Mishnah? Yeah, the Chumash. In other words, it was the Chumash that they were dashening. It was the Chumash which was the text. Everything was a commentary on the Chumash. From the time of the Mishnah becomes the text, together with the Chumash. But they're not really looking to the Chumash to understand Chumash. They're looking to the Mishnah to understand Mishnah. It's like a new layer of crystallization. That now you're working off the Mishnah as the text. The lochadu dor achador, each generation after the, they never ceased mila ayin bo mila farasha, to explain it, to understand it. Kol chacham lefi yidiyaso, v'havanato, each person according to their own understanding. V'nechaku v'meshach hashanim, v'perish miksas halachas sheva, there were few differences appeared in different halachas, etc. V'loi hayador shelo yen, ba v'chidesh v'menu chidushim, everyone was producing chidushim, all through the generations. V'lama v'menu limudim, and learning things out of the Mishnah, ad shehigia azman rabinu rabashi, until you get to Rabin Ravashi, Shehem Soif Chachmei HaTumah. These are the ends of the Chachamim of the Talmud. Again, not literally, because there are people that appear in the Talmud after, but they are the really the last generation of the major players. V'nit Yachid Rav Ashi, L'chabram Rav Ashi, got everyone together to produce something new. V'ra'al Asos V'dibri Kol Mishahaya Acha Ravina Rabbeinu HaKodesh. He gathered together everything that came after Rav Yehuda HaNasi. K'moy She'asa Rabbeinu HaKodesh L'dibri Kol Mishahaya Acha Moshe. Just like the Mishnah had gathered together everything before then, they gathered together the teachings and the people who taught them, etc., etc., and they put it together in one big book, which they called the Talmud. And there are four things that the Talmud is there for. Look at these four things. What is the purpose of the Gemara? Ha'echad, number one, Bir HaMishnah, just explaining the Mishnah, V'kol HaPirushim HaShonim, and all the many different understandings, shenemru al lashonet haMishnah, on the different languages used in the Mishnah, she'ein lahem hachra, when it's not 100% clear. Because don't forget, the Mishnah wasn't written, or textualized, depending on which view you take, it wasn't written to be totally clear. Why not? Why does the Mishnah not want to be... Because again, we're codifying what we have to, but we're leaving the rest oral, because we want you to go to a rabbi. We don't want Judaism on a shelf. All the things that we said about why oral law has to be oral, we want to try and preserve as much of these as possible. Okay? Even though they had this heter, eslas Hashem, which we'll talk about if we have time, to write down or to textualize the Torah, they don't want to do more than they have to. Okay? Says, therefore, there are differences of opinion about things which are not clear, intentionally not clear. But Tanakhoim Afroish Al Chaveru, and each person his claim against his fellow rabbi. Ubirer Hatanus Hatzodekes, to clarify those which are correct. Zuhiya Matarai Kariba Mitarito. That is the most important function of the Gemara, to clarify the Mishnah. And by the way, when you look at the Gemara and you learn Gemara, the first bit of Gemara on every Mishnah is basic clarification of the text of the Mishnah, of the ideas of the Mishnah, of the concepts of the Mishnah. Bahasheni, the second function is Psak Halacha. In other words, we never paskin from a Mishnah. Says the Gemara, people who try to paskin from Mishnahs destroy the world. Destroy the halachic world. Because the Mishnah was never written as a book of final psak. It was written as a codification of to memorize the oral law, but not the end, of the, not the bottom line. So the Gemara is psak halacha. Kedivrei echad acholkim shenechalku b'mishnah. Who, which one of the opinions in the Mishnah do we follow? Is it this one or is it that one? Or b'peirusha, or in the explanations of the Mishnah, one second. Or b'mashe nilma men, or what is learned from the Mishnah. Or b'mashe adomo ledivrei haMishnah, or any things which are similar to the Mishnah. Brises, things like that. Yes?
So, for a Mishnah that doesn't have any, like, machloket within it, or...
Yeah, we usually pass it like a Stam Mishnah.
So...
Not always, but
usually. Looking at the Mishnah, still not stop. Does the Gemara have to say that it's the
correct,
Pesach,
right.
Even though it's the only option?
Yes, because you don't forget there are the different kinds. You can have a Stam Mishnah, but then you can have in the same Masechta after that a Machlokas on the same issue.
So there are rules of psak, stam va'achakach machlokas. The halach is not like the stam. In other words, you have to look at it holistically, and that's what the Gemara does. The Gemara takes all the different mishnayot, puts them together, compares them with all the other understandings, and therefore you still can't pass in like a stam mishnah. If you open up a mishnah and say, oh, here's a stam mishnah, you cannot say that's the halacha. It may be, but you cannot guarantee it. Yes. Right, the text up until the time of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was the Chumash. That was the only text there was. From the time of the Mishnah onwards, there's now another text, and that was the main text that they focused on. So they weren't really making drashas on the Psukim anymore, they were more making drashas on the Mishnah. That became the leading text.
Is
yeah.
it possible to have something like that in today's world?
Well,
like
that's what we do. The Gemara now becomes the main text.
No, like compiling the Rishonim and the Achronim.
Well, we'll get on to that. That's a whole big debate in the Achronim and the Rishonim as to whether we now produce new works like Shulchan Aruch and use them as the basis for Halacha, or whether the Gemara is basically the last word and we have to always pass them from the Gemara. That's a big machlokas. Ashkenazim, Sephardim, within the Ashkenazim, we'll see that when we get there. So how we work Psak today. Some people feel that the last real word in Psak is the Gemara, and the way you pass in Halacha is from the Gemara. You become a Talmudic expert, genius, and you go through all the sugis and you work out what the Gemara says. Other people say, no. There are codifications in Halacha. There's the Rambam, there's the Shulchan Aruch. Passing from them. And that's a very big debate and discussion, which we'll get to. Yes?
Seems like, from what we're seeing here, like,
what did it say at the beginning? Ha'ais kim b'mikra, midah v'ainu midah. If you want to learn Chumash, that's nice, but it's not the real thing anymore. It's not that we've forgotten about the Torah. It's that we're not doing what they used to do on the Torah. The Sanhedrin, for the last thousands of years, had been taking the Torah and tearing it apart and producing halacha from the Torah. We just don't do that anymore. We can use the Torah now. We use it to learn Musar and Hashkafa and but we don't learn halacha from the Torah anymore. And we don't. People who stand up and learn the Psukim and read Halacha from the Psukim, that's called Reform Judaism, or really conservative Judaism, actually. We don't do that.
Wouldn't it be good to learn it holy?
What's that?
Wouldn't it be good to learn it holy?
Of course it's good to learn it. It's a wonderful thing to learn Chumash. And there's a chiyuv to learn Chumash every week. You're meant to learn Shnei Mikra Echad Targum. You're meant to learn the Chumash through twice. Of course, learning Chumash is a fantastic thing. Nobody ever questions whether learning Chumash as a limud is an important thing. You can learn a million things from Chumash, but what you can't learn from Chumash anymore is halacha. But the Pasuk says, don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. If you want to know the halacha, you open the Gemara in Chulin as to what the Basal Chalim is. You don't start to darsh the Psukim. It's a rarity that people go back to the Psukim and start learning new halachas out from there. Almost never. After the time of the Mishnah and Gemara. But yeah, we're not playing down the importance of Chumash. Chumash is critical. But for other things. And it is holy, of course, in the Dvar Hashem.
Now, like,
one second, Yanni, you had finished or you had a question on point?
It's like what was I saying, like, it's better to learn, like, read, like, the translation of Shakespeare than, like, the actual Shakespeare.
No, because the Gemara is not a translation of the Chumash. No. The Gemara is a work in and of itself. You mean it's better to learn the commentaries on Shakespeare rather than Shakespeare?
Yeah,
okay. I understand, but we're still in the world of Shakespeare. Meaning, we're no longer in the world where we have the expertise on the Chumash that they did, because those people we just don't have. We're in a concept of Golas now. You have to see this in the context of Golas. We are no longer in the situation that we used to be in, where we were able to do the things in the way we were able to do. Shakespeare scholars that are still in the same matzav as they were 100 years ago, 300 years. If there was some Shakespeare Golas, where from now on the people, you know, I'm just taking your metaphor and running with it, then maybe we'll turn around and say, now we're not on the level anymore to even read Shakespeare, because we're not. But of course that's not going to happen with Shakespeare. Yeah, George. Then we must go on.
No.
Okay, fine. Vashlishi, number three. Just one second, Rick, let's go on. Vashlishi, the third purpose of Gemara, Vashidushim Shechitshu Minam Mishnah V'chach Mikoldor, is the Chidushim, the new ideas, because there were new things that came out. Not new principles, but new, maybe, applications. Ubira Klalim Harayot Shalamdu Mehem. Okay, V'harayot Shalamdu Mehem. The proofs and the Klalim, the principles, etc. Okay, let's just skip a little bit to the fourth one. Vaharavi drushes hamat imois le'inim koperish isdam shiroi by lidarish boy hadrush. So there are also drushes. There are things that you learn out
from the ideas of different kinds, of agadata, things like that. That's also very important. And then the third one also, there was all the drabonas, all the gezeras, all the takonas that were said by the different Tanai, Mamurai, and things that came after the Mishnah, even though there really wasn't that much after the Mishnah at all. So we end up with a book called the Gemara. We used to call it the Talmud much more, but now we kind of call it the Gemara. And I gave you a copy of the Gemara, just a page. I've given you a sample page from the Gemara. Just have a look at that for a second. You'll see on one side it's just the front page from the Vilna Shas. Don't worry too much about that, although don't lose it because I'm going to go back to it another year. We'll go, but when we talk about the printing of the Shas, we'll talk about this page and what's written on this page. But for now, just look at what we have in a standard Gemara. Okay? And I just brought you a page from the beginning of, which Masechta is this? Pesach, and you see on the top, it always tells you what the Masechta is, it tells you what the Perek is. This Perek is called Oral Arba Asar, it's Perek Rishon, the Pesach, and it's Daf Beis. The Gemara in the Vilna Shas always starts on Daf Beis, it's not clear why, that's not for now, we'll talk about that when we talk about the Vilna Shas more. What you have in a standard Gemara today is the Mishnah of the Gemara, that is the basic text of the Gemara. Number one is Mishnah at the beginning, Oral Arba Asar, up until you see there's a big Gimel Mem, Gum, on line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that is the beginning of the Gemara. And the Gemara on that Mishnah, where it says number 2, then goes out and plays out on that Mishnah until eventually the Gemara has run out of things to say on that Mishnah. And then it starts a new Mishnah, and then it starts a new Gemara, etc. And then a new Mishnah, and then a new Gemara. That's the way it works. In our modern printing of the Shas, we always have Rashi, which makes a lot of sense, because Rashi is the, if you like, first level hand, you hold your hand and takes you line by line through the Gemara. Rashi's on the inside, number 3, okay, always on the inside of the Daf. What's that? He's hugged by the Gemara. Oh, that's interesting, I never thought of it that way. Whereas, you could only hear that in a seminary. I don't think any yeshiva guy would ever think of Rashi as being hugged by the Gemara. But, okay, I don't disagree with you. Number 4 is Tosfos, around the outside. It's not necessarily obvious that you would print Tosfos on a standard page of Gemara, because Tosfos is a very difficult parish, and there were many people through history that objected to printing Tosfos on a standard daf of Gemara, and said it should only be a more advanced limud, but I'm not getting into that for now. And then there are various other people, 5 and 6, which I'm not going to go through all of them now, but the main thing to understand is, a standard page of Gemara has Mishnah Gemara in the middle, and your basic medieval commentators, Rashi and Tosfos, the standard Rishonim, around the side. As opposed to a page of Mishnah, the Mishnah, think of this page that I gave you, the Mishnah is also printed as a separate text of just the Mishnah with no Gemara at all. This is a standard text of the Mishnah that you get upstairs, and it's printed all in these days almost like a Gemara, but it's not. Of course, in the middle you have the Mishnah, this is also taken from Pesachim, it says Chomish al-Nachri, etc. You have on the inside of the Mishnah someone called Rabbi Vadia Bar Tzimura, who was an Achron, not a Rishon. He's a late Rishon, early Achron. He lived in Italy, and then he came to live in Israel. He's buried just by Irabi. Yeah. He's like the equivalent of Rashi going through the Mishnah. And then you have something called the Tosfos Yontef, who is not Malia Tosfos, but is also an Achron of Yontef Lippenheller, who lived in Poland in the 1700s. He's on the standard page of Mishnah. So if you want to learn Mishnah just alone, and of course it's a much quicker limud than learning Gemara because it hasn't got any of the analysis, backs and forth, but you do need to know what it means, and therefore the Peirushim around the side make it, you know, understandable. Without the Peirushim, it's not really that understandable at all. And you have various other people on the Daf, which I'm not going to go through now, because now is not the time to go through them, but they're all different Achronim on the Mishnayos. I brought you on the other side of the page, a modern day Peirush on the Mishnah by someone called Rav Pinchas Kahati. Rav Kahati lived not so long ago. He lived in... you don't have it? Oh, you must have the original. Here, take this box. So, that means there's someone else out there that only has the Kahati and not the other side. Who's that? One of you probably only has this side and not this side. No? There must be someone out there. But never mind, doesn't matter. Maybe it's me. The Kahati Perush is like this. I would tell you the following. It's a much... Oh, no, that's not good. Even a portable charger won't help that. Oh, we're still going. Elisheva, your portable charger is obviously giving it kaya. Okay? if you want to learn Mishnayos and you want to use Kahati, so Rav Kahati's Perush is much easier and it's much more modern Hebrew, obviously, but it's much longer. He has a lot to say to explain each Mishnah, so it'll take you a long time. It's very helpful though, right? But if you want to learn Mishnayos quickly and have a harder time, give yourself a tougher limud, then learning Rav Avadya Bar Tanura is actually, I think, in some ways better. It's shorter. It's more Gemara kind of. Rav Kahati wrote the Perush for people who had no Gemara background. What's that? Ah, you're the one. I knew there was one.
Ah. Thank
you.
But they were sat next to each other. What
do we do anyway? So it's fine. So if you want to learn Gemara, if you want to learn Mishnayos, guys, my suggestion is that you make an effort to learn the Mishnah with Rav Avadya Bar Tanura, because as girls with learning background and Gemara background, you will be able to do that better than some. But you should also use Kahati where you can't understand what's going on. In fact, there is a modern version of Rav Kahati's Perush printed with the Bar Tanura at the side as well. We don't have it upstairs, but I think that's the best of all, because then you have both on the daf and you can use them where we need them to help you. Fine. So that is basically the Mishnah and the Gemara in that sense. Look on the map. Look on the bottom of page 3 for a minute. I brought you some quick facts, important things to know about the Talmud Bavli that we have. We only have Bavli on 4 Sedarim, meaning they didn't make Gemara on every single Mishnah. We have Moed, we have Nashim, and we have Nezikim. Now they didn't write Gemara on things that weren't relevant for in Bavli, but they did write on Kodshim. Which is an interesting question, because we have a full Gemara Bavli on Kodshim. Kodshim Asul deals with what? Korbanos. So why did they have Gemara on Korbanos when there were no Korbanos, there was no Beis HaMikdash and they were living in Bavel, but they don't have Gemara on Zeraim, which is all the agricultural laws of Eretz Yisrael, because they weren't in Eretz Yisrael. And they don't have Gemara on Tumah and Tahara, because they didn't have Tumah and Tahara anymore, because they're in Echus Laaretz. Once you're in Echus Laaretz, you're all Tameh. So there's no Tumah and Tahara anyway. So why did they have Gemara on Kodshim? Suggestion?
Because they're afraid that that's what they're going to forget the
most. So you could say that about everything. They're going to forget the others just as much. Why are they more worried about Kodshim than anything? Come on, I want a Jewish answer. You probably learned the Midrash already before. You'd have to put two and two together. What are you saying? No, because that goes by all the others as well. What did you just say, Jessica? I think that's the right answer. Possibly. From Hosea. You're giving me Pesukim from Hosea. There is an idea with Korbanos. There's a Medrash. Remember with Avram Avinu, the Brisbane of the Sarim, Kodesh Baruch Hu tells him the Shchus of Klal Yisrael will be the Korbanos, and Avram Avinu says to Hashem in the Medrash, what's going to be after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, what's going to be the Shchus then? And what's the answer that's given in that Medrash? That the people will learn Korbanos. Well, it's a slightly different thing, so maybe it's not exactly what you're saying. But if you learn the halachas of Korbanos, it's keilu you brought the Korbanos. In fact, in your Siddur, it says, Yihiratzon, yeah? You little Yihiratzon that joined the Korbanos. Yihiratzon that by learning about this Korban, it will be keilu, I brought the Korban. So there's a benefit, even in Chutz La'aretz, even after the Beit HaMikdash, in learning Korbanos. There is no concept that if you learn the halachas of Orla, it's as if you planted a tree. Or if you learn the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara, it's as if you went to the mikvah. There's no such thing. Therefore, the Bavli wrote Kodshim where they didn't write the others. They write the others. There is brochas in Zeraim, because that's relevant. There is nida in Tumah v'Tahara, in Taharas, because that's relevant. But the other ones are not. Okay, there are 2,711 blat. A blat is just 2 pages, which means there are 5,422 pages. You know how Daf Yomi works. Daf Yomi was invented about 80 years ago. The idea that if you do 2 pages of Gemara every single day, 1 daf, 2 sides of Gemara, you will finish the Gemara in 7.5 years, and you'll be able to do that a few times in your life, and it's really caught on, big time nowadays. Daf Yomi is very, very popular. It's great, in a sense, and it's not great in another sense, meaning it's like the open top bus tour around Shas. What do I mean? You know, you're an American tourist, or Canadian, or Australian, or South African, and you go to Bulgaria. Who's been to Bulgaria? I thought not. I've never been either. And you go to Sofia, which is in Bulgaria, I believe, and you say, what shall I do for a day in Sofia? I've got a layover in Bulgaria. So they say to you, oh, there's an open-top bus tour. You know, you pay $60, you get on a bus, you know, you have this plug the thing in your ear, you know what I'm talking about. And then you go on the bus all around Sofia, and you listen to this thing, and they say, on your right is the presidential palace. And, you know, and you look around, and as you, and the bus has already turned around, and everyone's going, what, was it that one? Was that one over there? And that's it, you pass it, that's it. On there, now it's on your left is the law courts. And meaning, you go everywhere, but you never go in anywhere. But if you ever want to come back, at least you know where it was, kind of. That's Yomi. Meaning, the only person that ever goes in anywhere is the guy giving the shir. Or the woman giving the shir. Because women's Daf Yomi is catching on as well. But the people who go to the shir never go in anywhere. They see where everything is, and they whiz past it at an incredible speed. Think about it, learning two daf of Gemara, two amudim rather of Gemara, in an hour. How can you do that? If you're learning those be'iyan in yeshiva, it'll take you 6 or 7 weeks to get through that amount of material, learning every day 4 or 5 hours a day. So how can you do it in 1 hour? The answer is, you whiz through. It's fantastic for the person giving the shir. If you can ever learn enough to give a daf yomi shir, you'll do really well. But going to the shir is good if that's what there is to do, but it's not real limud Gemara. You're never really going in anywhere, not knocking it, but it's a tough thing to actually learn anything. So the rest of it, I think you already know. Look on the back page for a second. I've brought you this historical context. By the way, one of the reasons that we're so into learning Bavli, have a look at source number 21. My Bavel, what does it mean, Bavel? Amar of Yochanan, Belula, it's so mixed up. The Mikra with Psukim, Belula, the Mishnah with Mishnah, Belula, the Talmud with Talmud. Meaning, Bavli has everything in it. It has a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of the other. And Tosfos says in number 22, Perish Rabbeinu Tam, de Batalmud Shilano, if you learn our Babylonian Talmud, Anu Paturim, Apoitrim, Atzmeinu, Mimashe, Amr Chachamim, we can be fulfilled the mitzvah of the Chachamim, which is to learn a third of our time in Mikra, a third of our time in Mishnah, a third of our time in Talmud. Our Talmud Bavli has everything. You know, the joke in Yeshiva is that Yeshiva guys, all they ever do is learn Gemara. Which is not a joke, it's true. Okay, all they ever do is learn Gemara. They know what Chumash is. Because they learn Gemara, the Gemara has everything. And then one day, one of the guys in the yeshiva finds the Chumash on the shelf. And he goes, whoa, look at this. It's a collection of all the psukim in the Gemara. Okay, so that's the joke, but it's like a little bit true. So the truth is that Gemara has a lot in it, and that's one of the reasons why people focus so much on it. Yes.
Was that just for the Bavli? Like,
is the Yerushalmi? Yeah, the is different. We'll talk about the Yerushalmi differently. Right. Totally different limud. We'll talk about it another time. I'm not going to go through the historical context now, but I want you to learn it. I didn't write it not for nothing, just to fill up a page of a paper. You have to understand how it works and the different generations and where they lived a little bit, and how the Gemara ended up being put together. I think it's very important, and I encourage my students when I teach here Gemara, to know who the people are. You don't have to know what they have for breakfast every Thursday, but you need to know if Rav Popper and Rav Zvid or Rav Huna or whoever it is are talking. You have to have just a feel, third generation, fourth generation, who's arguing with who, different strata, different Amoraim have different, if you like, seniority. So you need to know a little bit about that, but that will hopefully help you a little bit, and there are other good books on that as well. I brought you two nice maps. Have a look in the back page on these two maps. The first map is the Roman Empire, which I'm not getting into so much now, because that divided up at a certain point which became relevant. But the map at the bottom is very important, which is the different yeshivas in Bavel, in Sura and Pompadisa, and Baghdad eventually the two academies in Sura and Pompadisa all moved to Baghdad. They just kept the names Sura and Pompadisa. Just like the Mir Yeshiva has not been in Mir for a very, very long time, okay? But it's still called Mir and Ponovich and Tells and all these places, even though, you know, one day there's going to be like the Lakewood Yeshiva in... There probably already is. There is a Lakewood in Israel, no? What isn't they called Lakewood in somewhere in Israel? Maybe I just made that up. But, you know, the names just stick with the people. Now, the last thing I want to say in the 30 seconds left of the shir is that Eis La'asos Lashem is a very interesting sugya. I brought it at the beginning of the sheet. It's really, you know, I'm glad I did it this way around because it's more important that we got the stuff done on the Gemara. At the end of the day, Eis La'asos Lashem is a very complicated thing.
you know, invoked maybe as a kind of horacha for a few important things by Gedolei Yisrael to try and preserve, even though you need to amputate to preserve, sometimes you have to amputate to preserve. It was invoked for the production of Torah Shebaal Peh, for the writing, so I should say, of Torah Shebaal Peh, and the textualization of Torah Shebaal Peh. Many people, by the way, and I'll finish with this, the heter of formulating and writing Torah Shebaal Peh is still part of the Eis La'asos. Meaning, if you don't have to, then maybe you shouldn't. I'll give you two anecdotal examples. When they produced the Art Scroll Gemara in the 1980s, when they started working on it, they had a very important shiloh, which is, are we allowed to produce this book? Because Gemara had never been produced in English in that way, which made it accessible for the whole public. Okay, there were English translations of the Gemara, there's the Sfilsina, we've got one upstairs in the Beit Midrash. It's pretty much impossible to learn because it's just the English translation of the words. It doesn't actually make the Gemara make any sense at all. But the Art Scroll is very different. So they have to ask a shaila, are we allowed to do this? Is there still an Eis La'asos L'Hashem? Meaning, if we don't do this, will Gemara be lost on some level? Do we have to do this to keep Gemara alive with the people? And they did. They asked Hashem to motion other people. And one of the reasons that Daf Yomi became so popular, quite frankly, I think, is because of the Art Scroll Gemara. The Art Scroll Gemara allowed people to access Gemara in a way that they really couldn't do before. It's an incredible book, the Art Scroll Gemara series. Really incredible thing. But they needed a heter. And I'll tell you another story, and we'll finish with this. The Chasam Sofer was once approached by someone who asked him for a Haskama at the beginning of his book, you know, to say, I read this book, it's a thoroughly reliable book. Although when you read the Haskamot, they often say, I didn't read the book. You know that. The problem is you see some Hebrew writing at the beginning of the book, and you see it's signed by some famous person. When you actually read it, it says something like, well, I didn't actually read the book, but my brother-in-law knows the author, and he told me he's a thoroughly good guy, and may he be successful in Torah and mitzvahs, and you think, oh, that's interesting. That's why, by the way, before I say the Chasam Sofer, the Chofetz Chaim, when he wrote to the Rav Yisrael Salanter for a Haskama to say the Chofetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Salanter refused. So the Chofetz Chaim said, why? What's wrong with the book? He says, the book's fantastic and you're fantastic, but I disagree with one halacha in the book. What was the halacha? So he said, the Chofetz Chaim writes in the book that if you spoke Lashon Hara about somebody and they never found out, they never lost out, it's just that you spoke Lashon Hara about them. When you want to do tshuva, says the Chofetz Chaim, you have to go to the person and say to them, you don't know this and you never lost anything by it, but I've been speaking Lashon Hara about you for years, please forgive me. So Rav Yisrael Salanter says, what's the point of that? It's completely counterproductive. If the guy lost his job because of Lashon Hara, he doesn't know who spoke it, for sure you have to say, it was me, I'm sorry, please forgive me. But if the guy never knew you were speaking Lashon Hara, well, what does it help by telling him? So Rav Yisrael Salanter says, I don't agree with your halacha, so I'm not going to give you a haskama. So the Chofetz Chaim said, well, so write in the haskama, I agree with everything but this halacha. So he says, no, I'm not doing that, because people never read the haskamas. They'll just see my name and assume I agree with everything. So he didn't give him a haskam. So the Chasam Sofer was approached by this guy, and he read the book, and he said, he actually read the book, and he said, this book is so useless, basically, it adds nothing at all to the corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh that needs to be said, and therefore I don't believe that it's mutter to write it, because the heter of writing Torah Shebaal Peh is Hashem HaFeiros HaLasecha. And if I don't think this book adds anything, then there's no heter to write this down. Therefore I'm not giving you a haskam. He wrote this in a letter to him. And apparently when the guy printed the book, he printed the book with this letter from the Chasam Sofer on the basis that no one ever reads the Haskamas anyway, and he just has the Chasam Sofer's name on the page of the beginning of the book. That's what I understood. So always beware of Haskamot. Read them before you actually read the book, because you never know what they say. Alright, ladies.